getting there. Okay, still have 5 minutes to go. Okay, now, what's going on? FIFA Tall 6. Copy link John. Paul. Morning.
Morning.
Okay, so we have Mark and Benny. We have Sean. We have Paul. We have Aristides.
Yeah, Aristides. The wiki here, the GlueX wiki existed a long time ago, and it has its own username and password that we assign by hand. So it has nothing to do with your Q password. A lot of the wikis here, of course, you know, use your Q password, but this is exceptional in that way. But did you get my email with your account?
Yeah, it worked. I put the username and the password, and it worked fine. So
Okay, so yeah, we're just kind of an oddball because we're old. And established.
Distinguished, I like to say.
Distinguished. A lot of the graying we've switched. Graying around the temples. And we've never even run.
Distinguished is a synonym for old fuck.
Like, a lot of the class wikis switched. I would bet they've been around longer.
Oh, okay.
So I think we're just rebels.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's see. We have Justin. And what time is it?
Dead on.
Dead on. Curtis is not going to be here.
Oh, really? Well, in that case.
Dr. Mattioni, you're promoted.
That's right.
You wear it well, Paul.
This is where I belong.
Shall we get started? Get started. Simon's not here, I don't think. Anyway, okay. So we can maybe start. Sorry. Okay, so we can maybe run through this pretty quickly, perhaps. Hey, Chris. Okay. Announcements. Any announcements? No. Hit us from last time. I don't think there's anything here that's not already on the agenda. The updated branch. I have not touched the branch, although others have. So I think the only change on the branch is the stuff that Richard has been doing. He's the only one who's touched it since last time. I've not made any new tags either. So running jobs at JLab, random number seed. Yeah, we're going to run through all of this, I think. Schedule. Fatal, table condition sites, broken polycom was reported, understood, so we're in good shape. Okay, let's go to today's agenda then, unless there's anything that sticks out from last time people want to mark on, comment on, ask about. Okay, let's X out that tab and go on to random number seeds procedure. Okay, so I interviewed David. I caught him a full 45 minutes before the meeting, so I was well prepared. Okay, so this is sort of a snapshot, because you see the very last bullet, as we were talking, David was writing down a list of things to do, so, you know, things might change quite rapidly. But anyway, okay, so first bullet, BGGen and ACGen have config files, everyone knows, these can be set there, everyone knows that. Okay, so in the data model, or in the HDDM file itself, there are two slots for the HDGeon seeds, and there are three slots for the MC smear seeds. That's because CERNLive has a two seed thing, and Root has a bunch of them, and we've chosen the three seed random generator for MC smear coming out of Root. So, they may or may not be recorded there, though, but they exist. So, HDJeon records the random number seed. I'm going to talk about seed in singular throughout this, even though you know that in the case of HDJeon, it's a doublet, and in case of MC smear, it's a triplet. Okay, so HDJeon records a random number seed for every event at the beginning of the event. Okay, so in principle, if you looked at the model, looked at the event, you could figure out how to reanalyze it, although that's a little bit problematic. Because the input to HDJeon is not HDJeon output. The input to HDJeon is BGGen or whatever, okay? So there's a little bit of a complication there that exists. This is current status. Okay, MC smear by default initializes its seed from the process number, and so that is different every time, as we have discovered. It does go ahead and record its seed in the MC smear slot, okay, for each event. And if it happens to see a seed pre-recorded in that slot, it'll go ahead and use it. Okay. Now. So then you're reproducible in the model that you take your MC smear output and use it as MC smear input. Since MC smear has deposited its seed in there, it'll do the same thing over again. Okay, but which is sort of an odd use case, actually. Think about it. So you re-smear the file.
You smear the smear, that means you will lose the old seed. You overwrite the old seed.
No. I don't think so. I think because you're initializing it from the same seed, you know, even if it wrote it back in, it would write back the same number.
So, now, the other thing is you're going to break down for multi-threaded running, because in that case, you have multi-threads pulling seeds at random times. The thread to event distribution could be different the second time through than it was the first time through. And so within a thread, the sequence of events might be different. So multi-threading really messes that up, and there's currently no remedy for that. The other thing is mcsmear can accept the seed from the command line to begin with. So if you run single-threaded and set the seed at the beginning, you should get reproducible results if you analyze a whole file. Okay, and then David is working on some stuff. So this is still problematic in that I don't think we have a well-documented procedure for reproducing results once you want to do that for a particular event. But the information is in principle recorded in various places in this way. So that's where it stands.
So just feed a random number at the command line at mcsmear and just not worry about it?
Yeah, we should probably do that. We should probably change the command line procedure to do that.
That's a good point. Probably with a file number somehow.
I don't think random or multi-threading should even be allowed here at this smear stage because of the random numbers.
Okay.
Now, so any questions? I mean, this is still a bit of a muddle, I would say, but I think it might change in the near future. Okay, so let's go on.
The conditions page, you'll add some documentation as to how you want to do this and actually run things.
The command. The exact command line will be recorded on this on the conditions page, so that we're all doing the same thing. Yes.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right, so let's go back to the agenda. Z Fatal. Richard's not on the call, is he? Okay, so I linked to his original message, and several of you have confirmed. Who confirmed? Paul confirmed that it's okay. Justin confirmed that it's okay.
Yeah, it was about the same as Paul. I guess no failure.
Okay, so this looks solved as far as I can tell. Is there any? Is it just plain solved?
Think
as far
so.
As we know. Okay. Okay, so we don't know exactly how he did it, but we would need him to extract that information. So let's go on then. Okay. So that's good work, Richard. Okay, short file issue. Okay, so everyone's been saying something about this. And Paul, last night, sent out an email, which I've linked to, about non-determinism in computer science. So you want to comment?
Yeah, I mean, you guys have probably read it. I'll just briefly go over it. I was trying to reproduce a small REST file problem. Couldn't. Even on a file that crashed the first time, I couldn't get it to crash the subsequent run. But The output of the reservoir plugin was different every time anyway, so it's not so surprising that the crash wasn't reproducible. But so I went through and tried to figure out why that the results of track reconstruction are different every time. And I found and fixed one bug, but it's still a problem. So it's extremely rare, like one track out of 5,000 events, maybe. It doesn't happen very often. So I could use some help nailing this down. Kind of hoping. Simon there?
No, Simon is out of town.
Ah, how convenient. Kind of hoping he'd help out with this.
So I have a question. When you run the analysis over this file, and every time you find an event where the number of reconstructed tracks is not the same?
Well, technically, I'm just histogramming. I look at the very end of the five. I don't know which event number it is. I look at the very end, and I see that the number of reconstructed tracks is different from file, you know, from run to run.
Okay, but that happens literally every time you rerun.
On this one particular file, almost every time. I haven't checked to see if it's actually identical in some cases. But
the reason I'm asking, I'm right now running over that file five times in a row, but of course my computer is very, very slow. So up to now I only have run through it twice. And I write out for every event the number of tracks, time-based tracks, the number of hits in the CDC, and the number of hits in the SDC. And at the moment, the first two times I run over it, I get the very same results.
So number of CDC hits and FCC hits I see are identical. I think the number of tracks itself is often identical, but it's only when you look at like number of positively charged tracks versus number of negatively charged tracks that you see a difference. Or if you look at the number of times that a track was matched to a shower in the B cal or the F cal, that's different. So, because at the wire-based stage, it's identical, at least from what I've seen.
The D-track time-based object.
Right, but I think you have to separate it by charge or by PID to actually see the difference.
But that's kind of good. That means it's not in that part of the code, the problem.
Right. I haven't done enough checks to be 100% sure that that's the case, but it's certainly happening outside of that part. At least some of it's happening outside of that part. I don't know why exactly it's happening. But if you just use the monitoring hits plugin from the trunk, it'll make these histograms for you. So you can see how many of each object were reconstructed.
Yeah. You'd guess would be that it would be a reconstruction.
Yeah, because when I was reading your email, I had the impression that there may be already in the D-track time-based part may be a problem. But what you're saying now, it doesn't look like it happened. The problem is there. The problem is at the later stage, which is kind of good.
My suspicion is that the problem is when the tracks are matched to, say, showers. But that happens before the time-based track stage because it needs to use that match to get the time, which is used for the track. It also happens afterwards again. So it happens twice. I could use some help nailing this down. I think
an easy thing to do would be just to histogram the number of time-based tracks as a function of event number.
or the number of, you know, tracks that BCAL matches function of event number, and then subtract the histograms from one run to the next and see if it's different on the same event. And just try to narrow it. Find the event first. Do they?
Right.
Chris had a comment.
Can I just suggest, just from a pure programming standpoint, that this sort of error seems like, you know, if all of your code is should be deterministic, that it seems like the sort of problem that would result possibly from reading uninitialized memory, maybe from an off by one error in an array index or something like that. You know, if you have like a fixed size array and you only use like, say, you know, 2/3 of the fixed size array for your for storing your data, and you have an off by one error, you might be reading the one past that number that actually corresponds to your data structures or whatever. So that would just be my suggestion, that that might be a way, a starting point.
That would not surprise me. I ran Valgrind on it yesterday and found a bug like that, and I fixed that one. But then I ran Valgrind, so I fixed that one. I ran Valgrind overnight, and it spits out no messages, no errors, at least with the default configuration for Valgrind. So
right, well, that's not the sort of thing that Valgrind would necessarily catch, because, I mean, for example, if you allocate a fixed-size array, that's valid memory to access. So if you're accessing a point, an element of the array that you haven't written to, Valgrind doesn't care, right? It's just, if you're accessing memory outside of your allocated space, that's the sort of thing that Valgrind will tell you about, right?
True. It will report errors of conditional jump based on uninitialized value.
Okay. Also, if we're overriding something with, you know, going beyond, you know, you could be clobbering stuff, and that would manifest itself in a different way each time.
I think the key is these monitoring histograms now show that the numbers of reconstructed objects is different. So I think looking at that as a function of event number. And it's not, you won't notice it visually unless you like subtract the two histograms and then between different runs and then figure out the event number.
But Paul, you also were saying that like the number of neutral showers and things were the same, right? Or the BCAL hits were the same. So it seems like it's something in the matching that's going on.
Yeah, I think so. The number of BCAL and FCAL showers is the same, but the number of neutral showers is different. So if the shower is determined to be neutral if it's not matched to a trend.
The neutral showers involve some matching already, so it's sort of consistent with that matching being the government.
Yeah, but that can be traced back to the tracks themselves, the tracks. Independent of the matching, the tracks being different.
Right, and if you had an extra track, then you could have the extra match.
Right, exactly.
Well, and also if there's a problem determining the charge of the track, that could probably affect the matching, I imagine.
Yes. So it could be one of several things, but it's I haven't seen any problem at the wire-based stage.
Okay, well, this is at least a thread to pull on, something that we see is wrong, that we could... It's not an easy one to pull on at all, but we should probably pursue it. I think it's worthwhile to pursue, definitely.
Right. Now look
I'm not
at, look
sure
at the,
I know exactly what to... how to do it.
You gotta find the event, use htdump, print the object to screen, and... Find the one that shows up in one file, not others, and then print the screen all over the place.
Thing is to find out if it's always the same event, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Otherwise, if it's not reproducibly the same event, then it's that's really weird, right? And that would point more to something what you're saying.
Maybe we should take a single event and analyze it 50 million times or something. No. Actually, no. Okay. That's it's a very tough one, though.
I think I was going to say, I think this bug is not very frequent, so maybe we don't necessarily need to solve it before we run the data challenge, but I think having the data challenge hanging over our heads forces us to solve this more quickly.
Yeah, I agree. It's not time to give up yet, I would say. Okay, and then another message which came in, which I didn't have time to link to, is Justin ran some about the short files issue. So I have the message here. Justin, you want to say something about it? It was in the Z Fatal.
I was sort of responding to Richard's other comment that he hadn't seen the reproducibility with the short file size, which Paul's looked into more since then. But just to say that if I run on the same HDGAMP smeared file, I get short rest files when I enable the compression, and I don't get short files when I leave the compression turned off. So basically, if you run without compression, you don't see these short files. So the short files seem tied to the compression somehow. Whether it's related to this other thing that Paul's found or not, I don't know. But it just, I think we have evidence that the compression is sort of the guilty party there.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I sent a message out yesterday about things being inconclusive. Since then, I've run again with the compression off, and out of 250 jobs, I don't see any short files with 50,000 events. And correct me if I'm wrong, 50,000 event files, 250 runs. I should have seen some short ones, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a couple percent, 2% is what I was seeing. So,
yeah,
I think we've conclusively shown that if we have the compression turned off, we see no short rest files. So it's just a matter of how to solve that issue.
Okay. Okay, I had privately communicated the opposite conclusion to a couple of you last week, but I just had a mistake in my... I updated the branch and did make, and then make didn't remake the HD root, so I was running with the same old HD root where you could yell at it to turn off compression and it wouldn't respond, Okay. All right, well, that's advanced in understanding, if not a solution.
I would say, Mark, the trunk is okay right now. If you wanted to port the trunk to the branch again, then other people could use this monitoring histogram thing.
Okay, so you made a change to the monitoring histograms then also?
Yeah, there's new histograms now.
Okay. Okay, so I'll do that. I'll go trunk to branch again. Okay, and then that will bring in your other fix, right? To the matching. The weird one step track swim problem.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, good. So then let's go back to the agenda and any other remarks on experience running at the site. So, Paul, why don't you go first if you have anything?
I just want to briefly point out that B1 Pi crashed all three again. But I don't know why. The trunk's running just fine for me here.
Yep, B1 Pi crashed all three. I noticed that. Kind of off topic as far as running from the immune, but that's okay. That's a good point. It crashed horribly the time before that too, though. So I think something screwed up. I looked at the log files and I didn't see anything from the last time it crashed, but it crashed exactly in the same way this time. All right, so
that might be related to the bug that I introduced and then fixed.
Ah. Okay. Okay. Well, maybe I'll try to rerun B1Py again today, ahead of schedule. You know, ahead of the normal schedule.
Okay. So running at CMU, I did a few tests. With no EM background, 50,000 events takes about 12 hours, I think. With EM background, a rate of 1.1, half the events take, with 25,000 events, takes 24 hours. And then if I run with the full EM background, 5.5, with only 5,000 events, it takes about 18 hours. So comparing no EM background to full EM background, a factor of 10 fewer events still takes 1.5 times longer. So seems to run okay. Small rest file occasionally. No crashes. But as far as the number of events we want to generate at each setting, we may want to scale that by how long these things take.
Yeah, we may have to readjust our goals for how much high-intensity running we can do, practically. Okay. Sean.
Okay, yeah, so, I mean, I guess just to summarize some of the emails, I mean, I've been running here with just the normal E&M background, and things run fine. Running 20,000 events takes somewhere between about like 12 to 18 hours, depending. So I'm doing a little more benchmarking to see if I can figure out if there's a bottleneck or something like that. But other than that, things look good. So I've also been able to reproduce this this rest file issue that Paul has been talking about. So I'm going to see if I can make any progress on that. That's kind of what I'm looking at right now.
Okay. Justin, anything else you want to add?
Not really. I think the tests I sent out have been most of what I've been doing. We're sort of set up and ready to go once we get the pump sort of finalized. I also just wanted to say that we're adding a little more CPU to our sort of MIT cluster. There's another project called Future Grid, which uses some of this OpenStack virtual machine type technology that have clusters around the U.S. that you can get access to deploying virtual machines, basically the same as we're doing on a cluster at MIT. And so I'm aggregating a few more CPU hours at those facilities, which I'll just sort of include in the MIT portion of the data challenge, if that's all right, if that's good.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, what did you say the name of the project was?
Future Grid.
Okay, thanks.
I think it's futuregrid.org. And it's just sort of people trying to figure out how to develop these cloud-based technologies, running similar sort of cloud-based clusters that you can get access to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds good. Okay, running jobs at JLab, I said something about that. The sub-items 9.1, 9.2, 9.1, the computer center stands ready to sort of flip over some extra nodes onto the batch farm for us. Some fraction of those we have physics has loaned to Lattice QCD, and they've been running on the Lattice QCD site, and therefore we are now owed those CPU hours. And so that'll be added to the cluster, and then in addition, after that, we can borrow some nodes from Lattice QCD if we need them. So we probably could get to 500 cores pretty easily for this data challenge. We just got to tell them when we're ready to go, which is a bit of a problem right now. So right now I've been able to run about 300 jobs at a time before I top out. But that'll go up to at least 500, if not more. And there was an offer to give us the whole give us a huge number of the last nodes for a shift in case you wanted to see how fast we could possibly go. Okay, but all that, I mean, that's JLab specific, but it's a really big deal that we're going to get this big infusion of nodes for the challenge once we get started. Okay, the other thing is the SRM update. I talked to Chip yesterday about installing the SRM stack here, and he's very reluctant to do so. And in fact, even though I offered manpower, he still said that they had to do an evaluation about the current SRM, whether it was secure and so on and so forth. So that was a little bit disappointing. He's really pushing us to try to use Globus Online, although we've heard that that's not really the best tool for us.
Does he understand why, or is he not understanding that or accepting it?
He's not accepting it. I mean, he wants to see us try, I think, first, you know, to prove that
it works. It works. I mean, what do you mean try it? It works fine. It just doesn't do what we want.
Yeah, well, I think I'm just going to have to start SCPing files from outside and just show that I get totally balled up trying to do that. I don't know. I'm not sure what the way forward is here. He also suggested using grid FTP, just bare grid FTP to do some transfers.
Okay, SRM is just a grid FTP manager. Basically, it manages the flow using grid FTP. So it's essentially, he's saying you want to rewrite SRM in your own way, right? That's what he's saying.
Yeah, basically. Well, he doesn't know what SRM is, and, you know, they did that security evaluation several years ago. He now says that was several years ago. It would have to be done all over again. You know, I mean, it's one thing after, I don't know, it's very hard to understand.
Can I ask what the issue is with Globus?
Oh, yes, please. What is the issue with Globus, though, actually? Richard, can you...
Globus Online is a tool for your desktop. So, you know, you log in, you type your password, and you can do stuff. And that's great, but we want to be able to do stuff from batch. So I want to be able to stage into a batch job and then form new data and stage out. And it's not intended for that. I mean, one of the authors of Globus Online gave a talk on the grid forum, so I had a chance to talk to one of the original authors about it. He said, "No, I'm not recommending Globus Online for that application. And it might work, but chances are, since it wasn't designed to do that, it's gonna have bottlenecks."
Have you looked into the command line, the Globus command line interface?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. That's what the author said. He said that it wasn't intended for what you're trying to do, and you try to start up 800 or you know, 2,000 of these simultaneous applications. Plus, the authorization, the ANA doesn't work, so if you're not there to type your password, then you basically have to put the password in the script. And there's just 101 reasons why it's not the right thing.
Well, I know that you can basically upload your SSH key to Globus Online, and then you can just use the command line without having to specify passwords.
Right, yeah, and then you have to ship that with your job, which is not secure.
No.
The only way you can do it is you can save your SSH key without a password, right? And then, of course, you don't want to copy that somewhere. But if you save your SSH key protected by a password, then just like with SSH, when you load it into your environment, you have to type the password or enter it on the command line.
Okay, So there's some more dancing around we're going to have to do to get these files transferred. I'm going to have to learn something about all these tools, I think. Okay. So that's the JLab report. We have a report from for estates, RCDs.
Yes.
Or any more questions? Yeah.
So if you open, the PDF, so around 50 jobs of 10,000 events each. I try to have the data challenge to conditions. That's the conditions, it's not the data challenge to conditions, probably because I'm taking the HTTPS, the SIM recon from the tags, not from the not from the branches. So I'm not sure about that. Probably I figured out how to take from the branch the SIM recon data challenge too, but for the HTTPS data challenge, there's no scones to build that. So on the make file, the address that specified is the address for the tags, even if you put another version. So I'm not sure how to do that with the make yet far, but those are my conditions that I use. So I will try to have the data science to conditions ready for the next. But if you want to see, those are the results that I have. I don't know if it's.
Have you tried GridMake?
Excuse me, can you repeat that?
Have you tried GridMake?
No.
That's the one command. You just type GridMake, and it builds the whole software stack, everything behind the scenes. You don't have to worry about make or anything.
Okay. Is there a wiki page that I can refer to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, so you go to the GlueX wiki and just go in the search bar and type GridMake, and there's a how-to on it.
Okay. So I request 2 gigabytes of memory, so I run, like I said, 50 jobs, 10,000 events each. 37 events made it. 3 of them had a smaller REST file. The 13 files that they didn't make it was because of bigger than 2 gigabyte request, bigger than 2 gigabyte memory, and it was in HD root state. So you can see the statistics for the maximum memory, for virtual memory, for the system, and walk time. And that's it. I mean, the other two pages are with the old setup. I just have it there for the reference, but I don't think it's worth the time to go. It's just something that it's been done in FSU, and but with the old setup.
If you your 2 gigabytes of memory is fine if you're using the branch. That tag has some memory spikes in it that's causing those crashes. So if you switch to the DC2 branch instead of the tag, this shouldn't be a problem.
Okay.
Yeah, and GridMake is building on the branch. If you just use that, you'll get it.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Can we loop back, pick up a couple things now that Richard is here? One is on the Z Fatal fix, Richard. Do you have any? I mean, do you want to say anything about the details of what you did there?
Yeah. So there's a limitation of the Zebra memory management system that's used by the JSON3 library that it does not allow anything more than 64,000 pointers in any one bank structure. Bank structures are linked through pointers. And if you have more than 64 pointers linking one to another, then that's it. And it doesn't have anything to do with how big the arrays are. You can't go beyond that. And that's an intrinsic limit that was in the design. And so I looked into why that was happening, and the origin is a change that was put in by Benny. I think everyone has sort of taken advantage of it, so it's been a fruitful change that he introduced. And that was, instead of taking secondaries and just putting them on the secondary stack, a stack is a very efficient memory process because as you consume things on the stack, it shrinks and recovers memory automatically. And so the stacking mechanism for secondaries that's built into Jeant is a very effective way to save memory, even though you might be dealing with many showers that generate thousands and hundreds of thousands of particles. So, but what Benny did was he wanted every particle to have sort of a permanent ID throughout the whole event. And so instead of putting them on the stack, he appended them to the original vertex list that is imported from the Monte Carlo generator originally. So if you generated, you know, B1 pi, there might be 7 particles on that original list. But every time a secondary was produced, Benny had diverted it from the stack back onto the original list so that the original list could grow without bound. And eventually there were 64,000 of these background particles that appeared on that original list, and then it grew and couldn't handle it. So I looked in what he was doing, and he had already run into this problem and recognized it. And so he had special if statements in there. If particle was produced in the barrel calorimeter, then put it on the secondary stack. Do not put it back on the original vertex stack. And also if it's made in the forward calorimeter. So special cases were exempted from this every particle has an ID scheme. And I realized that what's happening in these background events is the same thing. The particles are starting out back at the photon source, and they're colliding, most of them, with the primary collimator, which acts like a calorimeter in this case. It just showers, and a lot of the particles are just buried inside there. And so I added it to his list of exempted volumes that, yeah, anything that gets absorbed in the cave stays in the cave. So it actually travels with it. So I guess that's not quite right. If the secondary escapes from the cave and gets into our detector, you will see it, but it won't have one of those IDs where you could trace it back to an original particle number. And so, in that sense, it's like a calorimeter stray backsplash particle. It has an ID that belongs to the original particle that produced it, but it doesn't have its own unique ID.
Okay, that's very interesting. That makes a lot of sense.
If it's okay. Own unique ID, what does it have?
Yeah, I think it just inherits the ID of its parent.
So it's indistinguishable from its parent?
No, it has the ID of its parent.
You know, for a lot of these things, we don't care. The hits, they make hits. They full-fledged make hits anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, to know that it came from which portion of the collimator when it escaped and all that stuff, I think is probably more information than we're ever going to need.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure that its own ID was unique in some way.
Yeah.
Well, it's the ID of the original background photon that made it. Remember that every background photon gets put on the original vertex stack.
Okay.
And so it sort of inherits the background photon ID. So you know it was a stray photon, another photon in another bunch that produced it. Let's say that.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that the Monte Carlo genealogy of the tracks that we care about wasn't going to be affected. So it sounds like
that's a good concern.
That genealogy is already affected at some level for things which, like Richard said, the backsplash. We don't track that genealogy right now. We haven't made any big effort to do that. And so there are cases where the genealogy gets lost. This is one of them. And but I think that's not our biggest problem right now. Okay. No, that's good to know. That's interesting to know. Okay, then the other thing, Richard, that we wanted to, I don't know when you came in, but it looks like we've pretty firmly established it. The short rest files are correlated with compression, on and off.
Okay, all right. Thank you for that. So, have you solved the problem of the non-reproducibility of it?
No, we have not. That's still out there.
Does somebody have some good suggestions? I mean, there was a time when MC Smear was pulling entropy from the environment, like from the date and time and, I don't know, the temperature of the CPU, et cetera. Is that ceased?
Well, the point is that we're running on the smeared output, so whatever unholy things may be happening in MC smear, it's the same input file to the reconstruction. So there should be it should be perfectly reproducible.
Is there entropy being pulled from the environment elsewhere, like in the reconstruction?
That's a good question. There shouldn't be, but I don't think we've pulled that out.
If it's reproducible, if it's irreproducible, then there must be, right?
No, not necessarily. I mean, we talked a little bit about ways you can introduce non-reproducibility using, Chris mentioned, uninitialized memory.
Yes, that's entropy from the environment.
Oh, yeah, okay. Not intentionally pulling entropy from the environment.
Okay, right.
Yes. Yeah, your terminology was way too technical for me to follow.
Okay.
Okay, let's see. So I think So I think that's been established too. It's also been, as you know, Richard, from reading the emails, we've established that your Z fatal fix is a good one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good. So I'll go ahead and reproduce that small REST file problem and solve it. So I'll post that. You want me to just check in the fixes on DC2 directly, or send around an email with and you try to get people's feedback first?
Well, I think, okay, well, let me go to that. I would prefer you guys, if you have a good fix, you think, just stick it on the trunk and let me know, and I'll pull it onto the branch.
I see. Okay.
That way I have better control of what's going on, what comes in, what doesn't, so on and so forth. It's kind of problematic when we have more than one person working on that. On that branch. The idea of a branch is to stop more than one person from working on the same line of code.
And, okay, my error. Okay.
No problem. And then you have to bug me, of course, you know.
Yep.
Now I'm in the way of your change getting to everybody on for the data challenge. But, you know, that's fine.
Sounds good.
Okay. So on the agenda, we were at electromagnetic background update. We kind of had that with the running. Okay, so let's go on to item 12, run number assignments. That's the conditions page. Richard asked me to assign some run numbers. So as an aside, Justin, this is where the commands should appear. I should have a complete set of what the command line thing should be. Okay, but
for HTJ, is it just have a place where we're going, or a description of how to put in the proper random number keys for the file numbers and whatnot?
You should be getting those out of the BGGen input, right? I mean, those are imported per event, okay?
No, I think I think what we decided last time to do was use the file number as a seed. You may have to modify that.
And that's the key for BGGen is coming from the file number. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
For BGGen. But I don't think for HTJ there's another seed.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we seeded BGGen with the file number, and then we just used a fixed seed for HTJ and just used the entropy coming from the BGGen, the fact that the tracks are they're scrambled events and let that go forward. There I go using the
interface. Okay, yeah. I see it in this run SFR file, so that's
right. So I think we used the fixed seed for that. Okay, but anyway, to get to the run numbers, this was my proposal from last time that we run 70% at nominal thing, 15% at high intensity, and 15% at low. I think we might want to maybe back off on the high intensity stuff, even what Paul has said. Does anyone have any feeling about that?
What is your proposal? Reduce it to 10%?
At least, yeah.
Comparing the high intensity to no EM background, if you have a factor of 10 less events with full EM background, it'll still take 1.5 times longer to run.
Well, okay, so maybe let's I'm going to back that off to 10%, the high intensity, and then the no EM maybe go to 10% on that too, perhaps.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
I think we just need to determine what we want to learn from the sample and then, you know, set some scale for the statistics we want for that.
True, true. I mean, I'm just doing it off the top of my head, obviously. So
I think we want to leave enough high intensity that people who are interested in rare physics can actually get an estimate for trigger. And of course, if you're doing rare physics, you need high rate, but at the same time, you're sensitive to leakage.
Yeah, to do the trigger studies, you don't need crushing statistics because you're not looking at the rare events. You're looking at the common, well, yeah. I don't know that we're going to be able to do a scientific determination of what that fraction can be in the time remaining.
I mean, part of it's a challenge, so we want to set high goals and then go achieve them.
Okay, well, what's the sign of that comment then? Should we wait until we know exactly how much high intensity we need before we start, or?
We'll never know that, will we?
I don't think so. That's what I'm kind of saying. I agree. Okay, so I'm going to go 10% on those, and we can argue about that as we go along, actually, right? Because we can change the mix at any given point and start filling in a different bin. Okay, so the proposal then is to take these different running conditions and assign them different run numbers using the Jonesian principle that different run conditions should get different run numbers.
And why do I have to be 0 to 99999? Then I have to pad all the zeros. Nobody else has to. Come on.
I'm gonna need a lot more runs than that for the OSG.
Well,
why don't you give me 4 million to 10 million?
Well, look, notice, Richard, that you're at the end of the list.
Okay, just give me more numbers, and somebody else is gonna run out of theirs and start taking the ones I'm running.
That was intentional. If you busted through, you know, there would be no one north of you for you to run into. You could just keep going, you know, for forever. I could put, unless you think you're going to overrun the digits.
No, I just want to allocate those so that I can just launch the jobs without violating this list here.
Okay. Well, I don't know. What do you want for an upper limit?
9,999,000.
Okay. We'll pay. Okay. You will turn over the odometer then.
All right.
Okay, so that's fine. Okay, so now we have the concept of run number and file number. So for CMU, then Paul has to do a lot of zero padding, and he has to do it. And okay, so the file name convention that I'm suggesting is for the rest and the root is basically the same. You have a five digits for the run number, seven digits for the file number. I think that fits. Is that crazy? Is that okay?
You should designate how many 9,000s, how many 9,001s, and so on for each of these run number ranges, because we need directions there.
Right. But what I'm proposing is that for run 9,001, CMU uses the same file number range as CMU is using for 9,002. I have not filled in the number of events, the number of runs that we want. Okay, so the note is that if we have 50K events, which is what we did last time, and then our total goal is 10 gig events, that would be 200,000 files total, okay? And I'm giving people a million file numbers in their range right now. So we should be able to saturate that goal within each institution, actually.
I'm gonna have to shorten the runs to keep them within the sort of optimum eight hours to 16 hours for the grid. So I'll just adjust that.
So I think that we should sort of aim for the standard 50K, but I think last time we didn't let any site adjust that. I think if we go ahead and let each site adjust that, that probably makes more sense.
Yeah, I agree.
What do people think about that? Richard agrees.
Yeah, I think that's fine. We just need to document it somewhere so people know how many events to expect in each file.
Right. And okay.
Yeah, because I think that I think that JLab is the only people who have been able to make 50K events per job in a finite amount of time. And I mean, it was with the impact on Don.
Okay, so obviously you want it as big as possible and still have a great chance of it going all the way through, right? And that reduces the size of the output file, blah, blah, blah. So, but that optimization may be site-specific, and so we're going to allow it to change. In fact, even during the data challenge, at a particular site, if you wanted to change it, that's fine as long as you document what's going on. So totally relax that standard with respect to last time. Okay?
What I'm doing also is I'm putting a full-fledged control.in because the one you've proposed is so brief. It leaves too many things to default. And I like to see the explicit. When I'm looking back, I want to know what I did, not just have to guess. What was the default of that day? Something like that. So, go ahead.
So, Richard, just override the control.in in that this is in subversion, as you can see at the bottom. Okay.
Yeah.
So, go ahead and by all means, go ahead and write in what you think is a better, because we're all supposed to be using exactly the same.
Okay.
Yours should be good for us too, and I agree that's a better document. Then we don't have to remember what default we were accepting. Yes, I agree.
You'll only have three control.ins now then.
Why three?
Oh,
one
yeah.
One for each setting.
Oh, right. Yes, that's right. One for each. Very good. And then another thing, I've been running with the pthread timeout of 12 hours, and now I have just about every job completing. So that might be another nice thing for everybody to adopt.
Okay, now pthread just
it makes no sense to be killing. It's like that pthread killer is like going out and hitting control C in the middle of a job. It just kills it off. I mean, what's the point?
Can someone remind me, educate me, is that a JANA parameter or?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the idea is if you're truly hung in some infinite loop or something, it would quit.
But that's what you solved, right?
But that's what you...
I mean, I haven't seen this as a problem on my end forever, so if whatever the default currently is.
Okay, yeah, I'm finding them. They're dying after 5 minutes. I tried the five-minute one. And I ran 100 jobs, and I think five of them died in the five-minute limit.
Oh, really?
So I'm just suggesting 12 hours, and I don't find any of them are dying at 12 hours.
There might be a resource acquisition-specific problem. Is it dying at the very beginning?
No. That's the pthread first event timeout. That I think I'm not seeing a problem with that anymore.
Yeah, that's the problem that I was having, so... I mean, for us, you need at least, not necessarily, but I was getting a lot of jobs and dying at the beginning until you increase it to about 5 minutes. So, I mean, I've been running 10 minutes for both timeouts without any problems. But, I mean, clearly this is a site-specific problem. So if we're running on the grid, you know, who knows what sort of resources are going to be like.
Yeah, somebody reboots an NFS server and then all your jobs, 800 jobs, all decide to hit Control-C.
Well, that's the question. Is this a site-specific parameter, or should this be something that we nail down? I'm not sure. Probably site-specific's okay, I guess.
Okay.
I think long-term, you can just tell David to change the default.
Default 30 seconds now, right?
Right.
Yeah. I think that would be the long-term solution. Maybe not the state challenge.
Okay. Okay. Let's not worry about that then.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So, I mean, Richard, that's kind of the point about having this in SVN, that we can all, you know, whoever has the best idea can go ahead and put it in there and tell the others and, you know, whatever.
Sounds good. I will do. So you want three of them, and should they be called control dot in 9001,
9002, 9003? Excellent. Okay. So today's agenda, I think we're done, all right? Are we done? Oh, the schedule. Goddamn schedule. Okay, we're behind schedule again. Okay, so I told Sandy that we were thinking we would tell her to start adding the farm nodes. We tell her a week in advance to start building up the JLab farm. And then I told her a week in advance would probably be about a week from yesterday. So I'm talking about starting here in nominally in 2 weeks. That's what I've kind of told the computer center. But then we talked about the uncertainties in getting ready. I didn't want to change this because I think only Curtis is allowed to change these lines in the wiki. I tried and I got an electric shock in the keyboard or something. You know? I'm not sure what to put here, but I think we should try to have everything ready in a week as an operational goal, though. I mean, as a sort of motivation goal. I don't know. Push everything by 7 days again.
I think we need to set a date to get started, and what doesn't get done, we're getting, not to say that we shouldn't put in the fixes, but at some point we just sort of have to say we're going to go for it, I think.
Well, I'm saying is, yeah, okay, so put another way, maybe we can say that at a meeting from week to now, we flip into triage mode and figure out what it is that we're gonna drop and what we're gonna go forward. Then almost by definition we'll be ready by next week.
Agreed.
Okay, so next week we're gonna make a go no go decision then for next week. Okay. All right. Anything else for today? Very good. It's a lot of progress. Thank you, guys. We still have a few more things to do, but let me recap. Richard's going to put in control ins for us. I'm going to update the branch from the trunk. I'm going to rerun the B1 Pi again. I'm going to
fix the short rest file problem.
Right. Rich is going to fix the short rest file problem, and I'm going to put a full list of commands on the page for including the random number seed thing, I suppose.
Who's going to chase down the non-reproducibility problem?
So, Richard, that problem may interfere with your rest file.
Yes.
Search. To be honest, if somebody could figure out what events these are happening on and can isolate an event and then pass it back to me, then I could do the detailed figuring out why it's going wrong. But if somebody could isolate something, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, I can try and track that down.
Benny's going to work on it, too. I don't think that's obvious how to do that, so having more than one person working on it would be great.
Yeah, I'll dive through the code as needed, and it may have to unless Simon's help, but...
Okay, so we have Sean, Benny, Paul, and Simon on that now. Oh, that's 18, man. Okay. All right, so I think that's it. Thanks, everyone. We're adjourned.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, I'm Chris Larry.
Chris?
Yeah. Ready?
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 Yeah.
The file that we're talking about?
Is Jeremy.